Good morning. Oh, good morning.
Hello.
Guess the voice hadn't woken up yet. Like my body maybe as well. Well, we'll see. Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Ted Maxwell. This is the engagement hour, and today will actually be two engagement hours. I'll be meeting this morning. I'll have Ryan Harper, a longtime healthcare advocate with Tenet Health and currently an adjunct lecturer at the University of Arizona, as well as running operating partner for MRCR companies. We'll talk a lot about what's going on in the world of healthcare, both politically and potentially in the future, and you'll get to know Ryan Harper a little bit, who's been engaged and involved in this community since his graduation from the University of Arizona almost two decades ago now. So it'll be great to have Ryan on board. And then following that, we'll bring in Chris and Corbin Edwards with Tucson Appliance Company, and we will have a great discussion with them on everything from why they are so engaged in the community in Arizona and why they love what they do. But Matt, led with it on the news a little bit. A lot of big news this weekend, as we talked about last Tuesday on the show. It was the day before Congressman Grijalva's services.
Right.
The services were truly amazing. They did an incredible job and quite the ceremony. I mean, I'm going to drop his name.
Wiesenberger?
No,
because he's gone.
The Bishop Kincannis. There it is. I knew I was pronouncing it wrong. Yeah. I got to get my stuff together this morning, man. Yeah. This is not an impressive start.
I was going to say, Bishop, we do have coffee.
Yeah, I've got to have some more, apparently.
Bishop, you didn't sound like that when you first, just for the listeners, he didn't sound like that when I walked in. So
it must have been that
frog.
That whole thing, I tried to log on to the internet. I got on to the guest one here, but there was no internet activity. So it's been a scramble already this morning. But he didn't. Bishop Kincannis did a phenomenal job with the service overall. It was truly quite an amazing thing. There was a lot of discussion, I think, that leads into the politics we're facing in the CD section, the CD7 election that's coming up, because there was a lot of discussion about his activism, his environmentalism, and his support for the common folks of his community. I think over the last 22 years, when you have a single congressman representing a district, of all those times, I don't know if he had any really challenging campaigns.
I think it was 2010. He kind of got, I think it was 10 or 12 when he kind of got caught off guard a little bit by Ruth McClung. He hadn't been fundraising. I think late in the game, they did some polling, and everybody was surprised, and the National Dem organization, the National Dem operation, had to send some folks out here to kind of shore things up. So I don't remember if it was 2010 or 2012, but it was the year Ruth McClung faced off against him in the general election. And she was in fact a rocket scientist. And
I remember.
And that was a little closer than anybody, especially the National Democrats, were expecting. So that one, I think it was at the height of the Tea Party movement. And it was also at the height of, he had called for a boycott of his own constituents. And he wasn't real sharp on his A game on the road during the campaign. There was one forum I read, Sam Stone, a well-known political operative, wrote about that he'd kind of dozed off at a forum and had to be waking up to answer a question. So in terms of campaigning strength, and in terms of being on message for his message, and in terms of public sentiment, that was probably the most that I can think of in his whole tenure. That was probably the most vulnerable year.
Oh yeah. And I think sometimes it's easy for some of these districts, the way redistricting talks, happens. And we know in the state of Arizona, 9 congressional districts, is really only 2 competitive. Mm-hmm. His CD7 is probably one of the safest Democratic districts.
Sure.
I'd say, Andy Biggs CD5 is one of the safest Republican districts.
Yep.
If not a Representative Gosar's
Gosar,
district.
Gosar, sure.
There are several districts that are just safe. So, one, it allows for some of those, let's say, more divisive
Yep.
sides of the parties
yeah.
to set in place and have control, because they're not, They don't even face large challenges often in the primary.
Sure.
I mean, there's almost always primaries. You know, 26 folks have announced for the CD7 race.
That's something.
It's going to be a crazy. Now, remember, those are folks who have filed
statements of interest.
Yeah. We'll see how many come through. But the services were really a reminder of what he did. And then the celebration of life afterwards. I was at the services. I did not go to the celebration of life, but it became almost a giant pep rally in a lot of ways. There was a lot of discussions about his how firm he was in the original campaign of, you know, si se puede, puedo. So we can do it. We can do it. There's a lot of that movement still out there. And I think you're going to see that revitalized in the respect of that's what I believe Adelita Grijalva is going to bring to this race is a reminder of what her father stood for.
Yep.
And that the choices between her and the real biggest candidate that's going to be here in our position is Daniel Hernandez, right, is clear. One, you want this continued focus on environmentalism, support of indigenous communities, support of the common folk, or you're going to want Daniel Hernandez, who's also, don't mistake it at all, a very staunch Democrat with very staunch Democratic beliefs. However, he's seen more, a little bit more mainstream.
Okay.
The other, you know, 13 Democrats that are out there, will they actually collect the signatures? Don't know. There's going to be a Republican candidate. Yeah. You know, there's 10 of them that filed. That district, it's all about the primary.
It's tall order as a Republican to take that district. Again, you know, you had some candidates along the way, Gabby Sacedo Mercer, again, Ruth McClung. But it's a tall order, right? Just because of the math. The demographics, the voter registration advantage. So it's basically a Voting Rights Act district. I was really hoping that Adrian Fontes, who's the Secretary of State of Arizona, would follow through on his consideration of going just to give the voters a choice. Somebody who's not so completely steeped in Tucson that maybe they can think on a bigger picture. He's got a statewide, because of the office he holds now, he's got more of a statewide perspective. And the district is not only in Tucson, which everybody here thinks, oh, this is a Tucson district. Well, it's Yuma. It's everything in between. You know, it's got a pocket of Maricopa County. I think it's got, it may have the town of Maricopa in it, but it definitely has a little sliver of Maricopa County kind of out in the southwest part of the Phoenix metro area. So I was kind of hoping that Adrian Fontes would actually run to give voters in that primary a choice.
And I think it would have been an interesting dynamics
had it been
Adelita Grijalva, Daniel Hernandez, and Adrian Fontes. There were some that felt that Hernandez would take away, he was going to be playing the spoiler in this. If that had been the case, he would have been taking away folks from Adelita. I honestly believe it might have been the other way around, and him and Fontes would have been going after the same votes.
Perhaps.
It is interesting because there was so much indecision or unknown in the lead up. You know, is it going to be Mayor Romero going to run? Is she going to be the one that wants to be CD7? Is it going to be Adelita Grijalva? They both have younger kids. They both do a lot of parenting with those kids in this area. They don't want to go and leave, you know, put that not at risk. I mean, you know, you can be a member of Congress and still be an outstanding parent involved, but it gets
Juan
a lot
Siscomani
more difficult.
Figured it out.
But it gets a lot more difficult. I mean, you think about how Congress Siscomani travels every weekend, sleeps on a mattress there to free up some of the funds, so he's got that ability. Then he comes in here, coaches ball, and does all that. You know, if it's Congresswoman Grijalva or Congressman Hernandez, they're going to have to figure out how they're going to, you know, do that. And then for Adelita, I believe it's going to be a bigger issue because she has got younger children and she's a very, very active mom by all indications. The interesting thing about Adrian Fontes is I had spoken with him in the last couple of weeks about this idea. He wanted to come down and start meeting folks in the community and the shift seemed awfully sudden. And I don't know if it's just the buildup. You know, once Adelita Grijalva released her letter, that outlined she would be announcing after the services, which I fully support and understand.
That's, sure.
There's a time to explain your political ambitions, especially when it was her father. That's the congressman who died in office. It'd be very difficult, who passed away in office. And the lead up of his illness, so, you know, fighting cancer. This was something that people knew it was going to happen, but when? So there's so much discussion, and I thought she'd stayed above that fray. There wasn't a lot of indication. But once that letter came out, and if you read it once or twice or three times, it became apparent she had interest. And that's the direction it looked like it was leaning. You know, Adrian Fontes announced about that same time. Then Bernie Sanders and AOC come to town, have their big pep rally.
Sure.
Well, Adelaide Guralva spoke at that pep rally.
Who was speaking, yep.
And she spoke pretty boldly and bluntly on her position with how to deal with the current events going on, as they would say, in Washington, D.C., with the new administration. That, I thought, left no doubt. Yet, you still had some of these other ones going out. And I think my guess is Secretary of State Fontes made some phone calls. I know, like I said, I talked to him and others who, I won't say we're saying don't run, because I don't think anybody would ever tell a potential candidate in a position like that not to, but I think there were some questions about how difficult it would be and how often you're perceived as an outsider when you come down from Phoenix to run, even though his roots were here, you know, school was here, he was engaged here.
Well, he's a Marine.
And yep.
And so there's a connection to the Yuma community right there.
There was a ton of connections. His announcement was that he's going to stay as the Secretary of State. And how has the Republican Party responded to that? They immediately turned around and, Representative
Culloden. Culloden,
yep. From the Scottsdale, he announced he's running a Freedom Caucus candidate. He immediately got support from Jake Hoffman and the rest of the Freedom Caucus that he's the one. And that really creates a situation where you've got everybody announcing about 2 years out that sure, they're going to run.
Sure.
I mean, so you look at the lineup already for the state, Matt. We've got governor candidates.
Yes, we
already
do.
Announced.
Yes.
Two on the Republican side.
Yeah.
Already competing for an endorsement. Mm-hmm. You know, one with an endorsement from President Trump, and one saying President Trump's going to endorse us both. Mm-hmm. Interesting concept if that's how it goes, but I mean, it's been done before. We'll see where that goes. Now you've got two candidates on the Secretary of State with a whole block of electeds saying, we've got our candidate.
Yeah.
Attorney General, President of the Senate's Peterson's already said he's running for Attorney General.
Is Glass? I thought
Rodney,
I heard.
Rodney Glassman has announced he's running for Attorney General as well.
Sure. Of course.
You're getting all these folks in these positions that 2 years out, yet they're still elected officials. They have to make decisions.
Right.
And how can those decisions now not be influenced by the fact that they are candidates?
They've just told you that a lot of their, you know, that some of their actions from here forward may be colored by projecting a certain ideology.
Absolutely.
And let's look ahead, since we're looking ahead to 2020, what, six would it be? I remember having a discussion with you and the former host here about my least favorite voting action a few years ago, which is the creation of lieutenant governor. So that comes into play next election cycle. Is this true?
It is true.
I'm still against. If you recall that discussion,
I remember,
I'm still very much against it.
I remember that very well. And
we need another elected official, like we need a hole in the head.
Well, the funny part is, remember, that lieutenant governor now has to run a department. So either they're going to run the department, or the deputy director of that department will have to be the director of that department, run it, depending on what their qualifications really are. But those rumors are swirling now.
Yeah. So I mean, do they run as we need to take a break. But do they run as a team, or do they run independently of one another?
Well, they run as a team.
Okay.
So it is a ticket.
Yeah.
And they have to announce, after you win your primary and qualify for the ballot, you have to announce your lieutenant governor choice so that you run as a ticket. And it's going to change a little bit. You know, will it be any more than the vice president changes the president, who you vote for president? No, I mean, you're going to look at the governor. But Matt, you bring up a good voice. We've got to get to a break, especially since our guest is locked outside. So we need We need to go let him in. You're listening to 1030 The Voice. This is the morning voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely behind the glass. Trusted local news and talk. And we'll be right back with Ryan Harper. Welcome back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, local news and Talk, and this is the Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Behind the glass is Matt Neely, keeping me on time and on target. He just claimed that the frog I started the show with in my voice jumped over to the other side of the glass, because the next thing you know, he was coughing, trying to get ready to get the lead in. But like the professional he is, he pulled it together and was smooth on the intro. So that was a little bit of a reset, because it was a little rough start. Great conversation, Matt, for the beginning. Matter of fact, Ryan Harper, who's joining me right now, and I just continued the conversation a little bit about CD7, about the governor candidates, and the fact that you're in a continual election cycle. The good thing with the CD7 one is it will happen fairly quick. The primaries are in July, and then the final elections in September. So it's going to happen quick, but that means that seat in Arizona will go unfilled until that time. I think we've got the field narrowed. There's, 26 folks who expressed interest, but I think Adelita Grijalva jumping in will change that field quite a bit, but we'll see. You know, I saw a tweet or an X or whatever we call them now out last night that said she's already closed her. She opened and closed her signature thing, which would tell you you can get all the signatures in 24 hours if you want. That also, I think, sends a message to the rest of the candidates.
The machine.
Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah. They mentioned at his services that they did not like being referred to as a machine, because it was, you know, in their words, Congressman Grijalva was all about the people. It's not a machine and going now. But the fact of the matter is, they are incredibly well organized. So the fun's about to begin. We'll see how Daniel Hernandez, he raised a good chunk of money in his first 24 hours, and he beat the board of supervisor, who, by the way, you were correct, she will be resigning here shortly, which impacts a lot of things going on in Pima County, especially PAG, RTA being one of them. She just had taken that seat. So a lot going on. Ryan, my apologies. I know you're a political savant, and you like to talk savant. We tend to talk mostly about this, but across the studio from me today is Ryan Harper. Now, Ryan's got a rich history of both what he's done in the state of Arizona at the University of Arizona, but predominantly you're going to hear us talk a lot about healthcare and other things, but we may dabble in a lot of other politics. Currently, Ryan's an adjunct lecturer, which I want to hear more about what you're teaching at the University of Arizona, and you're operating MCR companies, but you'll never, for me, it's what you did before that. A long time with Tenet Health. That's how I first met you when I first took over at SALC, and you were the manager of government relations at that time, but you ended up being a chief operating officer for both the Tenet Health hospitals down here in Southern Arizona. West, yeah. Before that, you were with TriAdvocates, who's a longtime associate of Southern Arizona Leadership Council as well, is doing some of our representation up north. And one thing I didn't know when I looked into it, I did not realize you had worked as a budget analyst in the Arizona governor's office.
That's where I got my start. Yeah.
Under Janet Napolitano. Yeah. Well, the purpose of the engagement hours to get people involved and get them engaged. And part of it's knowing that, hey, you can do that with almost any type of background. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Ryan? And
sure, happy to.
What led you down your path?
Honor and blessed to be here today, Ted. Thank you, General Maxwell. He smirks when I say that. I'll start with, I went to the greatest university on this planet, the University of Arizona. Came down from Phoenix in 2000. And had a blast down here in Tucson, and this is where I really learned to love Southern Arizona when I came down to U of A. Met my beautiful wife here. Life took us kind of different directions for a while, and I ended up in Phoenix. Actually, right after college, didn't have a job, so I made this kind of grand bargain with my father. I would move home, and he would give me a year to figure it out. I had 1 year. I had come to University of Arizona wanting to go to medical school, but I think dirtbags got in the way of that.
I did notice you had a medical degree out of the University of Arizona, then went right into public policy.
Yes.
So dirtbags has had that effect on people.
Dirtbags got in the way of that, as my father says. But we had this grand bargain where I would come home for a year, kind of figure it out. And if I couldn't figure it out, I would apply to medical school. So graduated, figured out I needed to get a job, and I ended up actually at the legislature. I was a page. I was a page for the 2005 legislative session, so right after college. And greatest job I've ever had, to be honest with you. One, it's hard work. Got to be there early. You stay late. You pick up after people. You move things around. So hard labor teaches you hard work. But as a page of the legislature, you are afforded an opportunity to come in and go. You know, you come as you please in the legislature. You walk into committee meetings. You walk out. You're behind the scenes. You hear, you know, senators and representatives talking in their office. You go and, you know, there's a lot of downtime in the legislature, as you know. Senators and representatives will host kind of just you in their office, right? A lot of hours I spent with Carolyn Allen and Karen Johnson and Tony Helen from Southern Arizona, Tim B, right? Just talking about what's going on in the Capitol, right? What's going on in the state of Arizona. And that's where I kind of decided I wanted to go initially the public policy route. But, you know, always wanted to be a doctor. And so, you know, wanted to keep a thematic kind of strand going, right? And so I thought, well, hey, like, let's focus on health policy, right? So I came back to Arizona after graduate school and worked for Governor Napolitano's budget office, where I worked for George Cunningham, Southern Arizona icon. Gave me a great job to start, where I worked on the state Medicaid budget for behavioral health, and kind of took my career from there. Did some consulting, kind of had the political bug, so I wanted to spend some time lobbying, where I lobbied for Tenet before going in-house in Tenet, where we met. And then after about 10 years of that, I got bored and decided I wanted to go the business route. So I was already at Tenet managing their government affairs for Arizona, and had a discussion one day with the state CEO and asked him, hey, is there an opportunity to kind of pivot to do more business-oriented things? And got into business strategy, hospital strategy, and then chief operating officer for both Carondelet Hospital. So it's been a lot of fun.
Well, you've got a future in radio if you want it, because I noticed you were watching the clock and you timed this out perfectly to the bottom hour. There was one little secret you left out of your story. We'll talk about that when we first get back. And then we'll dive into some of the politics of the current day and age. So that's Ryan Harper on the other side of the microphone with me. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, and we'll be right back after the bottom of the hour. Medicaid. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell. The Morning Voice, 5 days of the week, five different hosts, five different formats. I encourage you to listen to each one. And as we say with everything, let's live with what you like. You know, if you don't like something, you got options. But the fact of the matter is, The Morning Voice is trying to provide you with those different options, give you a lot of different ways to look at it. So appreciate having the professionals, Matt Neely behind the glass and Ryan Harper with me in front of the glass. Now, the one thing, Ryan, that you did leave out of your story is you did get an advanced degree as well.
I did.
And that was with Duke University.
The second best university on this planet.
Well,
Duke University.
Yeah, I did like how you just glossed right over that Sweet 16 game. I'm not going to mention.
It's still a little raw, is what I'll say. You know, Arizona first, always. Always Arizona first. But
well, yeah, you were a lot of people, if you know anything about the University of Arizona, Ryan was a Bobcat, which is a pretty prestigious honor to be bestowed upon the students. And it kind of makes you a Wildcat for life, more than just the normal Wildcat for life. Yeah. I think there's a lot of us with the University of Arizona degrees that are Wildcats for life. We will U of A first, always. But so what was the range of emotions during the Duke Arizona game?
Oh, I love Caleb Love.
Yep.
You know, I was very proud of him, how he went out. You know, you ride the roller coaster with Caleb Love, right? And I have been in the car for the entire ride with Caleb, but very proud of how he went out and how the team went out. You know, that the end of that first half, I just really sucked the momentum, I think, out of the team, right? That 6-point swing. And then Duke to go up by like 19 and then us to fight back. Just very proud of the Cats. They showed a lot of grit. They showed a lot of grit this entire season, right?
It was a phenomenal ending to a phenomenal season that I think people forget what a challenge the Wildcats took on this year in the schedule in the pre-league games was phenomenal. And we came in kind of wounded, but we we met what I would say was a lot of folks' expectations, maybe even exceeded them with performance in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. But that game was so brutal. I was we did a remembrance for my father last weekend in Idaho. Mm-hmm. So I had both my brothers, their families, and my family there. They got to experience what it was like to have a wife and kids and myself who were, I mean, the screaming at the TV, the yelling, the yelling at the refs. I mean, you know, it was as if we were in the stadium.
Yeah.
And the funniest moment of it all is when my oldest daughter, who's a U of A grad, turned to the whole group and said, "Wow, I obviously didn't get this gene." Because she was the only one not yelling. The rest of us were going crazy.
That's awesome.
So
good for her.
It was
good
a great thing.
Yeah.
Ryan, real quick,
yeah.
MCR
yeah.
companies, you're the operating partner there.
You gave me
a little insight. Can you just give the listeners a little insight?
So MCR, we are a kind of integrated investment shop. We do both real estate and private equity, all in the healthcare space. So I lead up the healthcare private equity side after my time at Tenet and down here in Carondelet. Wanted to do something a little different, but still stay within healthcare. And so really focus on the kind of financial budget, you know, operational business side of healthcare. So started a small PE fund. I know that's kind of controversial, and we can talk about that if you want. You know, PE's role in healthcare.
That's private equity.
Private equity, yep. And been doing that now for 2.5 years and really enjoying the freedom and the flexibility that it offers. But, you know, you get to see a lot of interesting things kind of and in private equity, a lot of interesting companies, a lot of interesting founders, and you get to create some interesting relationships with people who are out there looking for capital to, you know, start companies.
So talk a little bit then, since we've opened that door, what do you think the advantages of private equity investment in the healthcare space? I mean, your company's going to focus on actually having that private equity in owning medical facilities.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of debate about the role of private equity in healthcare, right? Because at the end of the day, healthcare is about the person that you're serving. And, you know, can maximizing returns be, you know, congruent with good quality outcomes? And I say it can be, right? Tenet Healthcare, for-profit healthcare institution, you know, so they are trying to maximize, they are trying to create a return on investment while also driving high quality care and high quality outcomes for their patients. It can be done. There is nothing not-for-profit about healthcare in this world. Any entity, not-for-profit or for-profit, has to make money. Because with those dollars that you make, that's how you reinvest in your employees. That's how you give them raises. That's how you invest in capital projects. That's how you build towers to do the next greatest orthopedic surgeries, or buy the robot to do orthopedic surgeries, or, you know, the ECMO machine to provide life-saving care when your heart and lungs are damaged. You got to make a profit for that, right? I think private equity, though, like sometimes the pendulum goes too far. And, you know, myself, you know, our firm, we try to, you know, kind of be in that sweet spot, that middle kind of like logical place to be. There's stories about, you know, going too far, and those are bad actors and they need to be weeded out, I think, in it. But at the end of the day, healthcare, and we can kind of use this as a entry point for some other discussions, healthcare is largely a small business, right? A lot of small business owners, physicians, they're small business owners. They need capital to grow. You can do it through the public markets. You can do it through the private markets. You know, right now, there's a lot of flight to private markets because I think you're seeing some of the, you know, churn and choppy waters in the public markets and, you know, Wall Street and things like that. So there's been a big emphasis in private market, you know, fundraising right now and investment from private markets. And it's a source of capital to allow individuals to create small businesses. And ultimately, at the end of the day, like, I think that's what we in this country are all about. We're about capital formation. We're about deploying risk capital. And we're about supporting individuals, founders who want to create small businesses and, you know, create jobs.
Well, quite often I think people forget that if you are in the private world where you're investing with your own money, you're investing with your own desires, your own need, you're giving up your life to try to make this business work, you are more likely going to be the ones that are going to look for the discriminators, what makes you better, what service you can provide better, but also the efficiencies.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think there is a lot of role. The challenge, as we've talked about quite often, we've got, that you have, is healthcare is a need that everybody's got. It can't be one of those that you don't get healthcare and you do.
Yep.
And that's creating a lot of the concern. So right now, from your persistence, both with MCR, but all your history, I mean, you, I won't say I want to be doctor, but that was your desire. You wanted to go into healthcare.
That's discriminatory to all the wannabe doctors out there calling me a wannabe doctor.
But you've made it through your advocacy, through your work with Tenet Health, and then you got operational experience there as well. But even through working with the legislature, you understand the challenges of the public, and if we want to call it the private medical systems, and how they both play to make a complete system. What are your big worries right now?
Yeah, great question. My biggest worry right now is what is going to happen over this next, is it 9 months, where they're trying to come up with the budget resolution to go through Congress, right? You know, what's the next phase from the continuing resolution that they passed a couple weeks ago? The Trump administration has given a mandate to find, I think it's $880 billion to be cut out of HHS, Health and Human Services. There's only a few places you can go for that: Medicare and Medicaid. Medicare, everyone knows about, right? Medicare, healthcare for 65 and older, right? One day we'll all be there, right? Medicaid, right? CAID, Medicaid, healthcare for low-income, less fortunate individuals, right? Medicare is funded, ran from a federal level. Medicaid is largely ran from a state level. In Arizona, we have a Medicaid program called ACCESS, Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System. Horrible name, but ACCESS is nationally recognized.
ACCESS rolls off the tongue when you say what the letters stand for.
Yeah,
not
exactly,
so much.
Exactly. Nationally recognized as one of the best Medicaid agencies in the 50 states. Weirdly, the last Medicaid agency, Arizona was the last state to adopt Medicaid. First state to do managed care in Medicaid, but highly efficient, provides a lot of great services for people. Now, you might be saying, well, if it's run by the states, like what's the problem with the federal government? Well, Medicaid is largely funded from federal funds, right? And so when you're looking at cutting $880 billion out of Health and Human Services, Medicaid is going to be cut. If that's a mandate, Medicaid has to be cut.
And I think what people don't realize is this process that we're talking about to get to this budget is going to go to reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, reconciliation protects. This is the falsehood. You cannot cut Social Security. You cannot cut Medicare. So if you take Medicare out of that $880 million of cuts, where is it going to fall upon?
Yeah.
The concern right now is it's going to fall upon Medicaid.
Exactly. And there's a few ways that they're going to look at doing that, right? Changing the amount of money the federal government gives to the states. Maybe capping the money the federal government gives to the states. But what I would say is that there's probably no one on earth who would argue that the federal government needs to cut spending, needs to get its house in order.
Absolutely. You know,
our debt path is not sustainable, right? But we need to do it in a thoughtful manner, right? In Arizona, about 25% of any healthcare provider's revenue comes from Medicaid, right? And healthcare, you don't discriminate. There are not Medicaid doctors. They're not Medicaid hospitals. We all go to the same hospitals. We all go to the same doctors at the end of the day. And so if we're cutting Medicaid dollars, that's less funding to go to hospitals, less funding to go to physicians, outpatient clinics, FQHCs, all that. And that will have a dramatic effect on the supply of healthcare that we have in Southern Arizona, as you know, through SALC. It's a big topic that we've talked about, right? So I'm very concerned about what the impact will be of cutting federal Medicaid dollars to the states, specifically Arizona, and the impact that's going to have on healthcare access for everyone here. And, to connect those dots, at the end of the day, if someone is on Medicaid you know, they have access to primary care physicians. They have access to pharmacy. They have access to, just like anyone would on, you know, commercial health insurance. If you take away their Medicaid enrollment, their Medicaid benefits, they now have to go to a single point for their healthcare, because physician clinic offices are not required to see Medicaid beneficiaries, are not required to see someone who cannot pay. The one place that is required are hospitals. And you're going to start seeing an uptick in ER wait times, because sick people who would otherwise be going to a primary care physician will end up in the hospital emergency room.
Okay, that's a great setup. We're going to take a break now because I don't want to rush our conversation on this one, because it's important for people to hear the concerns, and maybe Matt will be able to steal us an extra minute at the end. We'll take a look at that one. I'm trying to get one. So that's the voice of Ryan Harper talking about the concerns from the healthcare perspective for the country at this time. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. This is Ted Maxwell. You are listening to The Morning Voice. Interesting parlay of some music there coming in this time. Huey Lewis, the News, another concert that I saw when I was at the Air Force Academy. So we're going.
All right.
So you're just trying to pick out that those One for the Ages songs and show everybody how old I actually really am. So, yeah, we go back. We go back that way. So my guest right now is Ryan Harper, amongst other things, is also an adjunct lecturer at the University of Arizona, and you teach the undergraduate survey of American healthcare.
I do.
So you've already kind of set the table for us on what some of the concerns are, because there's nothing there. They've got got months to work this out, but it's one of those things. I don't think we want to be caught off guard by a decision of Congress and then go into a panic. So I do believe that, especially around the healthcare, the conversations. You finished closing out by saying I'm going to take it to you. What happens when they make the cut? What can the state do? Can they backfill all that money?
In theory, they can, right? The state can say, hey, we're going to step up and backfill the federal cut. But at the end of the day, though, that's not realistic, because we're talking, you know, tens of billions of dollars. So Access, our state Medicaid program, has a budget of $21.1 billion. And 3/4 of that are federal dollars, right? So it's really unreasonable to think the state can come in and backfill a significant cut in Medicaid funding, because the money is just not there. There's a lot of priorities in the state. And so the only way to really fill that hole is raising taxes. And I don't think anyone really wants a tax raise. So at the end of the day, if there's a federal cut, that means there's less dollars going to hospitals, less dollars going to providers, which is going to, one, create hospitals to have to take a hard look at their budgets, right? Because that's 25% of their revenue now that is going to be less. They're getting less than 25% of their revenue now. So hospitals are going to have to look at staffing ratios. Hospitals are going to look to the services that they have to provide. Interestingly, in Arizona, almost half of all of our births in Arizona are paid for by Medicaid, by Access.
I think that was the most shocking thing I had learned in the last 3 months talking about this.
Yes. And L&D, you know, labor and delivery, is one of the most expensive service lines in a hospital, because for 95% of the time, you have great outcomes. But the 5% of the time where you don't have great outcomes, you have to have a lot of services ready to go in case that 5% of the time hits, right? So it's very expensive. 50% of births in Arizona are covered by Medicaid. We cut Medicaid eligibility. Those moms now are showing up in emergency rooms with no prenatal care, higher risk for really bad outcomes, and hospitals aren't getting paid for that. So hospitals have to make tough budget decisions, right? There was a study that just came out from the Arizona Chamber Foundation up in Phoenix. They do a great job supporting, you know, businesses throughout Arizona. For every $1 billion that the federal government would cut in Medicaid funding, the study says that Arizona could lose 36,000 healthcare jobs. $1.7 billion in payroll, you know, associated with those 36,000 jobs, and $3.7 billion of economic activity. Healthcare has traditionally been and continues to be one of the highest paying careers in the state of Arizona. I think it's like 9% higher than the average wage. Healthcare's average wage is 9% higher than the, you know, statewide average wage. One of the fastest growing sectors of our economy and one of the largest employers in Arizona. So when we look at Medicaid spending, cutting Medicaid spending, we are really potentially setting up Arizona for some dire economic consequences, where hospitals and healthcare providers have to make bad economic decisions. But more importantly, everyone ends up in the same emergency room, right? It doesn't matter if you are Jim Click, Bert Lopez, or, you know, me, you, or anyone. We all end up in the same emergency room.
And what you're saying in part is those who no longer are insured are going to start using their emergency room as their primary health care.
Yes, they'll start showing up in the ER as their primary care provider because hospitals cannot turn anyone away. Hospitals have a federal mandate, a federal law, that if you show up at the door, you have to be stabilized. Now, in all reality, stabilized means treated. Let's be very honest here. And so the wait times are going to just increase. You'll show up in an emergency room where it would have taken 2 hours to take a look at your broken leg or your laceration where you need stitches, and that'll be 5 hours, 6 hours. And there's no worse place to be. Where, ironically, there's no worse place to be when you're sick than a hospital.
And that means the cost for everybody else goes up because remember, those folks that use that as their primary care mm-hmm. aren't payers and right. the hospital won't turn them away.
Exactly.
So Ryan, I'm going to bring you back on a little yeah. more regular basis, definitely over the next couple months because it's going to be critical.
Yeah.
Thank you for all you do. Appreciate having you with us today.
Thanks so much.
Everybody, you're listening to The Morning Voice on 1030 Bustos, part of Bustos Media Network, your trusted local news and talk. We'll be back at the top of the hour. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I am Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely is behind the glass, spinning both the tunes and keeping us on time. Great conversation with Ryan Harper a little earlier. And if you have not seen the video of the wheelchair basketball team celebrating their national championship at Center Court, you need to YouTube it. It is, I mean, there's chairs flying everywhere. There's things going on.
That's pretty cool.
It was the joy and the excitement, it was phenomenal. You could tell they were a team because it didn't matter if you were on the court when the game ended or you were joining the fray afterwards. It was a great celebration, and we sometimes don't give enough credit to our adaptive athletics program that we have at the University of Arizona. We have one of the best in the nation, and a national championship proves
that. I just
that.
Love the continuation of the theme that we're a basketball town. You the women bringing it in the NIT. They went to the final game a few years ago. The men, I think, you know, they'll have their day again, and they played a tough game against Duke, you know, but we've got a national championship on the men's side. We've got an NIT championship on the women's side, and we just keep piling them up. So good on them, and thank you to the wheelchair basketball team for continuing and helping to further cement Tucson's legacy as a basketball town.
Outstanding. And I'm joined now by Chris and Corbin Edwards.
Hello.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show.
Hey, well, real quick, I just want to bring up something. Jim Click, my pal, he's bringing up the U of A adaptive golf tournament at Tucson Country Club coming up in May, and those guys are just amazing and what they do. And
it's just another reason for me to be depressed about my own golf game. You had to bring up golf.
But I mean, it's just amazing what the adaptive kids, how good they are.
Athletes are athletes.
Yes.
I mean, to me, that's mm-hmm. that's the thing. There's, you know, there's level playing fields, and there's some playing fields that aren't fair, and quite often those who have the true athletic ability, they perform no matter what their limitations, what their handicaps are, or their abilities, they come out and can show you what being a true athlete is.
100%.
Definitely.
So that's great. So for those of you who don't know, and if you've been listening to the show, you've been hearing some advertisements for Tucson Appliance, the appliance company. But I've got a sense that a lot of people know all about this company, and Chris, about you specifically, and a lot more about Corbin. Recently, you've got a famous advertising scheme. We were going to talk
scheme.
Well, I won't say scheme. Scheme's a bad word.
Campaign.
Okay, campaign.
That sounds better. There we go.
I'll help you out. Okay.
you are well known around the community for a lot more than just your company. But one of the purposes of the engagement hour is to encourage people to get involved. You know, we're I still consider the United States of America the best nation in the world. That's why people want to come live here. That's what we want to do. Do we have our challenges? Absolutely. All countries do, because we all have different beliefs and opinions. But with being part of this country comes rights and responsibilities, and some of those responsibilities are getting engaged. And both of you are incredibly engaged in the community, so we'll hit on that. But I always like to start it by letting my guests tee up how they got involved, how they came to where they are in their life. So, Chris, I'm going to start with you since you're the elder of the two Edwards.
you can tell is it the gray?
Well, it's not purple anymore.
Thank goodness. True. I did do that for 6 months, and, you know, not everybody will do something like that to raise money for the American Heart Association Heart Ball. I did that just so that people would ask me why I colored it purple. And what I would do is I'd just say, well, now that gets me into, you know, roll off the tongue. The American Heart Association Heart Ball is going to be January 25th, 2025 at Tucson Convention Center. And I still have it in my brain, but I'm a salesman.
And you're a salesman, but that's also part of your giving back to the community.
100%.
So talk to me about growing up. I believe you did grow up in Tucson. Talk to me about how, you know, your father was the founder of Tucson Appliance Company.
Well, I went to Sabino High School. That's why my colors are now purple and gold. When I became partner in 1997, I changed the name from Priority Appliance to Tucson Appliance, so I got some privileges to do that. I only got a small share, 30% share at that time. But I will tell you that before that, he had a business called Bedco Distributing Company. Now, don't go in your head there. Bill Edwards Distributing Company. We distributed appliances and evaporative coolers, and I would help with deliveries. And the Harvest Gold and Avocado Green, some of you might remember those colors. Well, those appliances were a lot heavier back then. And there was another financial crisis back in 87. I'm sure you remember it. Some of us don't, but like my son over here. But my dad went bankrupt back in that time and lost everything, owed people money, paid everybody back that he owed, though, which is very important in a small community. And I watched that. I watched him do that. And he went to work for a place called Priority Factory Service. He was selling appliances, and that was a service company there, but he was selling appliances for them also. And he ended up that they were going to close it. And he said, no, I want to buy it. He bought a service company. We don't know anything about servicing appliances.
I just saw the back of the glass panic on that one. So let's keep it rolling.
Cut it off.
Yep, and so we didn't know anything about servicing appliances, but we knew how to run a company. And so we had 15 technicians, and when they would bring the old appliances back because people didn't want them fixed, we would recondition those and then resell those. And then my dad knew people in the community and raised some money and started buying new appliances, and people didn't want to do the apartment complexes because they were a pain in the... Mm-hmm. And we would deliver and install the old appliances, pick up the old ones, and then resell those as reconditioned. We'd do the onesie-twosies because some of the new apartment complexes went with the bigger companies. So we'd sell them one refrigerator, pick that up, then resell it, and it would keep going. And it snowballed. And then once, you know, a lot of people are old school sometimes, just like I am. I don't like digital, but my son, he's growing up in that age. My dad was into the newspaper, and he wanted to advertise in the newspaper. I was like, Dad, nobody reads really the newspaper anymore. They watch TV. And this is back in 97 when I came up with my first commercial. I never took acting classes, as you can tell.
That's actually part of the lore, Chris.
Yes,
that is
exactly.
Part of the
it's
lore.
It's very authentic. And so I said, okay, I got an advertising agency. Let's do this. All you have to do is remember the commercial and know what you sell. Because I learned that at Pima Community College that I went for 2 years. And I that's all I went. I mean, the rest was hard knocks.
I talked with Chris a little earlier before we came on there saying, I thought I would be able to find a lot of stuff. And I found a lot of stuff, but it's all centered around Tucson Appliance Company. And we're going to talk quite a bit about the company today, but we're also going to get into what you've kind of done. And that was the education-wise right there, Pima Community College, School of Hard Knocks. And so you've brought the company a long ways. But before we get to talking about the growth from that point on, kind of where you did your first commercial and what you've done with the company since then. Corbin, I want to come to you for a little bit before we go to our first break. And so your dad grew up following your grandfather
Yes.
into the business. So was that like something that when you were born, it was just annoyed this is going to happen? Or how did you come? What was life growing up in the Tucson Appliance Company world? And how have you made your own way to get to where you are today?
Growing up, it was pretty fun, actually, because I would always go over there as a kid on Sundays and just run around the back and play hide and seek in the fridges with my cousin. So growing up, it was
actually
a lot of fun.
Getting into the fridges. That's dangerous stuff. You hear about those stories.
things. Well, the older ones had the older ones. They had the latches. That's when your time is. But these ones don't anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, it was a lot of fun growing up, and definitely learning a lot from my dad. I went to Desert Christian for about most of my life, from second grade on to graduation, and I had a deep interest in learning the company. My dad actually gave me a choice. He didn't force me or pull me into it. He said, you can do this if you want. I'm not going to force you into it, but I wanted to get into it. I saw how dedicated he was and how much hard work he put into it, and I was admired by that, and I wanted to follow in his footsteps and kind of go on with that. So when I turned 18, I was like, all right, Dad, I'm ready to start working there. And he said, no. Okay. So he wanted me to work somewhere else first for a little bit, kind of get used to like the whole working scene, the environment, if you will. So I worked at McDonald's for a little bit, a couple of months. And I was like, Dad, I want to go to Tucson Appliance. He was like, all right, you can start coming over here now. So then that's when I started getting involved into the company a lot more. Started as like a janitor, sweeping, mopping, cleaning the toilets, stuff like that. And I just started working my way up, and I'm still kind of involved kind of everywhere in the company, in like the warehouse, delivery, outside sales right now is what I'm doing, talking to the departments, kind of like what he started with. So definitely learning from him, but I'm not taking the exact same steps as he did.
That's great. So we'll hit on that. I want to hear a little bit about what your future is. Hopefully I won't get you fired by the time the show is over.
Please.
But the infamous first commercial.
It was there was a movie coming out, and back then that's when animation started coming out, and it was The Incredible Hulk. And so I got painted green. I had an advertising agency that was very creative, and he made it into an Incredible Hulk commercial where I actually smashed a washer. I didn't actually smash it, of course. I'm not that strong, but there was a lot of different aspects to that commercial. The thing is, people remembered it, and they knew I sold appliances. And that just blew up right after that. And I got hooked after that, because everybody saw it. Everybody talked about it. Anywhere I went, I was an immediate local celebrity.
People still talk about it to this day.
Yeah, there was a commercial I think you ran a little while ago that was a compilation of a lot of your commercials. And or there's something you put together. It may have just been a show, but I remember seeing it. And that's where the Hulk scene, I saw that for the first time. And it was, I did not realize that was the first one.
A collage of a lot of the old commercials. I've done about 150 of them. So that's a lot. And it's coming up with the creativity is a lot of fun. I did a John McEnroe one because I was a tennis player back in the day. And I also did a Caddyshack one, which
I've
is always a lot of fun.
I've seen the Caddyshack one. Yeah.
I've done a, there's a couple of them that didn't make it. I think, God, what was that one movie? I'll think about it. But I did an Indiana Jones one. That was a lot of fun. And
I've noticed Corbin's been getting involved in more and more. It's kind of like now, okay, you've let him out of the janitor role and the cleaning the restrooms thing, and now you've started bringing him in that. What do you think? Is that continuation of the TV medium going to be a big part of your input to the company?
Oh, definitely, yeah. It's a lot of fun. Doing the commercials, kind of like taking your own spin on it, giving ideas from other people. It's a lot of fun.
Well, what about your first commercial, son?
You want to talk about the Batman
Absolutely.
Commercial right now? Perfect, yeah. So the first commercial I kind of took role of, it was pretty recently, like a year and a half
two
ago.
Years
two
ago.
Years ago? God, time really does fly, doesn't it?
When you're having fun.
Yeah, exactly. The first commercial I ever made was the Batman commercial, where I starred as Batman. I had my dad as Alfred the Butler and two of the salesmen as the Joker and Two-Face. And we just had a bunch of fun with it. We didn't really have so much of a script. We just kind of rolled with it. It was more of like a just go with the flow sort of thing, and it turned out incredible.
Let's hear your Batman voice.
Oh, God, I can't do it right now. You got to give me time. I'm Batman. It's been a while.
There you go. All right, we're gonna take this opportunity. One of the things I do want to talk about is the infamous...
That's next.
Something we'll come back and tease what I think
your slogan,
in some way, you're best known for.
Yes,
we've got both Chris and Corbin with us for most of the remainder of the hour. So if you're interested in calling them and asking them anything about either the industry, what your concerns are, how you can get in touch with them, what they can do for you, because I know they sell everything from the brand new appliances all the way to the scratch and dent.
And reconditioned.
And reconditioned, trying to service the entire community here. So you're listening to the the owner and the future owner of Tucson Appliance Company on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. If you tune in tomorrow at 7 o'clock for The Morning Voice, you will not hear the voice of Grant Krueger as he is back in Washington, D.C. Alan Kaith will be covering for him.
Alan Kaith?
Who's that?
Dan, Big Al, he's listening. I'm telling you, he will.
I love Alan. I'm just giving him.
Dan Morris will be sitting in with him as guest host, as co-host.
So they're going to do a co-host. Grant's being replaced by two. That tells you a little bit about Grant's abilities. He can't just be replaced by a single guest host.
And we're going to be talking with, I think Jesse Lugo's going to be on, and I've got a couple of others, just a second here.
Yeah, Jesse Lugo just got the endorsement of council member Richard Fimbres. Jesse's running for the seat in Ward 5 in this coming November elections.
And you know who else we're going to be talking to? Jeff Scott. He's Arizona News Network. He's the one that puts together our Arizona news package that we've been using as well. So it's going to be fascinating to meet Jeff Scott.
Yeah, that would be interesting to hear that one, the packages that you use, obviously, to
talk. Yeah, to augment our CBS News and our own local coverage here.
That's going to be interesting.
Yeah. There's a lot of
good reasons to tune in tomorrow to listen to The Morning Voice, as you should tune in
now
every
morning.
I've
taken over your whole segment.
It's perfect. So we kind of teased the intro. Obviously, there's an infamous slogan, and I'm not going to take it away from you because I want to give you both the opportunity to close with it. How did that slogan and the appropriate hand gestures come into place?
All right. Well, I'm going to bring that one up. I'm going to start that one. Then Corbin, you're going to tell them about the new one that we came up that you decided on. Because when I started this, there was a price tag behind me. What I was doing is I had two thumbs pointing behind me saying, where our low prices, pointing at that, are your priority. And then and then people keep saying, well, that's not how you say it. Where low prices are your priority. And I just kept saying, no, this is what I was doing. And I knew what I was saying and I understood it. But then, after several years with the pointing part, because I was pointing at the TV, at the people in the audience, the people that are watching the commercial, and that's where the two fingers came. And actually, a lot of people have copied me, including my pal, Scott Lehman. He does it, and there's a lot of other people that come up with it, and that's okay. I didn't patent it or anything, but Corbin came up with even a better idea, and I just love this so much more. Go ahead.
So we kept the finger movements, because if it ain't broke, don't fix it, but we changed it to where you are our priority, showing that we care and take care of our customers.
Well, and especially true if the original, and that's a great story that you had the prices behind you, visible, and given the pointing at them and then coming forward. But there's no doubt you go on social media and all the time see Chris or Corbin Edwards or anybody that works for Tucson appliance companies, that the pointing of the fingers is the trademark. And the fact that it can be not stolen, because like you said, you didn't officially trademark it. It'd be probably tough to be able to say,
exactly.
I'm the only one that can use this hand signal ever again. But it's definitely what people notice. They see it. They see that. They see you. I see people come up to you and they immediately start giving you the finger, but it's the good finger.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not the bad one. So it's definitely, it's part of your company.
Definitely.
And I love it. I mean, it doesn't bother me one bit. I keep it going, and I make sure that people do the finger point no matter where I'm at. Actually, I just did a class with Ed Ackerley, and they took a picture with me, and all of them did the finger point. It was really nice that he's got that advertising class, and I gave him all my pointers because, everybody's different. Everybody sees advertising differently.
Absolutely.
I just have too much fun with it.
Well, and Corbin, it's good to hear that you're already stepping in and one, willing to go to your father and say, hey, I think we could change this and it's going to be for the better. And the fact of the matter is he said yes. And I'll tell you, just having the two of you in the office, there's such a difference. Chris has about seven pieces of paper spread out all over the table in preparation. He's ready to take it anywhere. And Corbin, you're just ready to go.
I'm just here.
I won't say just here. No. You're playing. So
actually, real quick, I mean, I'm just top of mind. I'm really quick. And this piece of paper is just something to have to do with our later on tariff speaks. And normally I wouldn't bring something like this because he's just like me. I mean, he is me. Thank goodness he looks like his mother, though.
Well, there are some good things to happen in this world. And I'd agree with you on that comment, Chris. So what do you see as the short term of TAC? What's the changes? What do you, is business working well? You know, you relied heavily on television. Is that changing any? What is currently going on in your industry?
Well, I'm going to take that one, son. A lot of this digital advertising is coming up, and people want to do that. I mean, it's not just the commercials. You've got the social media. You've got the podcasts, which I'm thinking of possibly doing also. And just to see, to dabble in it, to see if that is something that's going to work, because if you don't try it, you never know if it's going to work. But, of course, this is his... this is going to be what he's going to be doing later on. And we are going to do more commercials. We're going to come up with them. We just haven't come up with a good one yet. We might do a Minecraft one, son.
It's in the works. We're talking about it.
Oh, good. All right. But if it's not broke, don't fix it.
So that's a great slogan. And you even said that, Corbin. If it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
So your model going from, you know, new appliances to
reconditioned, scratch and dent, new and high end.
That's the other some other appliance companies focus on one or the others.
Correct.
How do you feel that's playing into who you are, and that is the providing service for everybody?
You want me to go, Corbin, or want to take it?
No, right. Take it away.
Well, so the reconditioned appliances that we have, we can sell at a very inexpensive price to help people out. But most importantly, we get to donate that to charities, to people in need, to churches. We do that. Every single day we have donations, and I don't mind doing it. I love it. I want to take care of our community. Our community is about 1 million people, and that's all I want. I just want our community to be taken care of and be able to. I'm blessed to be in the appliance industry to be able to do that. Sometimes we donate scratch and dent appliances, like to my pal at the YMCA, Curtis Dawson. They have something at the Y Camp, and we have some of these all-in-one washer and dryers, about 6 of them. We're going to donate the scratch and dent ones to him so that he could take care of the kids up there, where my son went up and learned not to let go of the rope.
I can't believe you still remember that. Yes.
Tell them about that. Just that real quick story.
We took a school field trip, middle school, high school. I can't remember. We went up to the YMCA camp, and one of the days we were doing the high ropes, little obstacle courses where you have two of the lobster claws and you got to like hook them on there, climb a ladder, do a zip line at the very end. But I did not pay attention very well to the instructions, and they have two lobster claws to make sure to emphasize safety. And the one rule is to don't take them both off at once. I took them both off at once, and I got yelled at a lot for that, and I learned my lesson that day.
As long as you were only yelled at and you didn't get hurt, that's great.
Definitely.
So I told you time flies. We're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to go to the break now, but when we come back, we're going to expand on your last couple comments about the future of TAC and your engagement in the community.
Thank you.
So you're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell. Appreciate all the hard work from Matt Neely behind the glass. And I've got Chris and Corbin Edwards with me, the owner and future owner. I guess that's okay for me to say it that way, because that's how you've got it on your website.
Exactly.
100%.
Yeah.
Now, I did appreciate when I asked Corbin, so when's this future owner get to change? He said, oh, that's up to Dad. So good luck. You know, we'll see. I'm not sure your father's ever going to lose his enthusiasm for this company.
I was going to say, every time everyone asks me that, I'm like, I don't know when he'll retire, but he'll still be showing up every day, even past retirement. So we'll see.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's when you, once he makes that change, that's when you have to figure out how to stop that.
I did tell him it's a 15-year college, by the way, and he's 5 years in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's okay.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in college, you can skip class, you can do, no, I'm just kidding.
Don't give me any ideas.
Yeah. So I just asked Chris during the break when I made the comment earlier about the difference in the two issues. He does. He's got 8 pieces of paper over in front of him, and he gave me a little bit more detail. So we're going to switch the order. We're going to finish the program talking to you about your philanthropy and involvement in the community and support for a lot of good efforts and organizations around here. But I want to go to right now, a lot of the business community is concerned on what's actually going to be the outcome of tariffs, but it's already impacting your company.
Yeah, 100%. We just had a buying show about 3 weeks ago, just when Trump decided to put the tariffs on. And what happened is that then all the appliance companies said, okay, after this, you guys need to make a big buy. So I bought over $500,000 worth of appliances and made sure that I have inventory for 3 months at least to see what's going to happen. Because, of course, Trump is a negotiator. He may negotiate something differently. You just never know. I mean, right now in front of me, I've got Danby, Monogram, LG, Samsung, Electrolux, GE, Decor, Summit, Whirlpool, all giving us their price increases starting April 1st, which is today.
Today.
And so today, when you order something, it's going to be more expensive. And the percentage is, you know, anywhere from 5, 10 to 20%. And that's going to be a lot. And I'm blessed, so blessed to be in the appliance industry because I'm essential. We're needed. And people are going to need to do it anyways. So we're going to be okay. We're going to figure it out. We're going to adjust our prices accordingly, probably not till May, because that's when we have to start reordering, depending on how it is, just like back in COVID, when everybody bought all the freezers and all the refrigerators, and we had no inventory. It was hard. We had to double and triple order, and this may be another thing that we may need to do. And I'm also lucky to be, or blessed to be, in the scratch and dent industry, because that is also where we save customers a lot of money.
And I was going to ask about that. I was going to ask about, is with all this, both the uncertainty and in this case, you got seven letters telling you your prices are going up today. Do you see some of the purchasing shifting? I mean, the one good thing about you is, like you said, you have from high end all the way to scratch and dent and everything in between. Do you see, have you modified yet any of your supply chain, expecting maybe a shift in attitudes?
In my supply, I did. I overbought. I overbought. You know, I just bought over $500,000 worth of stuff that should last me 3 months. It may only last a month. And I know for a fact that, depending on what people are going to buy, they're going to buy refrigerators, they're going to buy this or that, because, we'll be out of stock again. And then you're going to have another supply chain problem because they're going to be dealing with the tariffs at the, where they bring them in from China or from Canada. They're going to be coming from Mexico, and there's going to be people stopped. They're going to have to be checking these trucks, and I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know.
So we were talking during the break. A lot of your goods and services, or a lot of your inventory, makes multiple trips back and forth across the border in its production.
Yes, it goes to Mexico. It goes to Canada. Stuff shipped from China, from Vietnam, from all over the place, actually. And most of it, the only one real brand that's made in the United States, some of it is Electrolux and some of it is Whirlpool. Mm-hmm. So that will not be affected. And so that may be the brand to go with because, the price is very important. Some people will buy from Home Depot for $20 and that just kills me.
Well, there's, and sometimes I think we miss things. I mean, that was like the concern with 414, another half cent sales tax on the city of Tucson. There's people that will drive significant distance in some cases and buy
waste time and money
to save 20, 30, 40 bucks.
Exactly.
But when you do it on big ticket items, an additional half cent can be thousands of dollars. I mean, especially when you look at automobiles. So. Mm-hmm. So do you see, you mentioned there's two companies that predominantly manufacture here in the U.S. Do either one of you think that when the tariffs go in place, will there be more production done in the U.S. in your industry?
Yes, there's going to be manufacturing done, just like Trump's been talking about. There's already talks about more manufacturing of the brands. I believe Samsung, Decor, GE's got some manufacturing in the U.S., but a lot of it is in Mexico, believe it or not.
Right.
And there was another one, LG. LG is also going to start manufacturing.
I mean, nearshoring, that was a big movement within the last 4 or 5 years, about the time, even during the Trump administration, first Trump administration, when the AMSC was coming into place, the renegotiating of NAFTA, to bring things back here, because the labor costs in China had increased a little bit, mm-hmm. made it more reasonable. So a lot of stuff was coming back to Mexico. And now the question is, with this change, will more of it even come back to the U.S.? So I guess time will tell.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm pretty sure that I mean, it's within the next 2 years, that's what he actually he campaigned on, and I believe that's what he's going to do.
I think he believes it will bring it back, and I think that's time will tell. I think the challenge we face now is the uncertainty. You're dealing with uncertainty in the market.
100%. I think everybody is.
The stock market's reacting to uncertainty. It's, you know, in Ted's perfect world, we'll have answers to what the certainty will be in the next couple months. If it's
6 months,
if it's 6 months would be good as well. If it's 4 years of uncertainty, it will be interesting for anybody. But Corbin, you're not new in the business. You've been now with it for several years. But as your father said, people have to have appliances.
Exactly. It's a necessity.
So when you look at where the company could go in the future, what it's your thoughts in your generation, what do you believe is going to be the thing that will continue to drive the success of Tucson Appliance?
The future.
And this is not this is not a test question for if your dad's going to keep you in the position.
I got to look at my notes. Hold on. No.
Yeah.
Everyone's always asked me about what the future looks like. Am I going to open up a second location out of Tucson? I don't think so. I think I'm just going to stay where we're at. Potentially, maybe like in the future, open up like a different store in Tucson, perhaps. But like as you said, time will tell. But definitely want to keep up what we do with advertisement, the commercials. There's always a bunch of fun. Radio, newspaper, billboard, stuff like that.
Well, there's a lot to be said for being the dominant force and the known force in a market and having that. And I think with the name, the shift to the name helped. I do notice more advertising on billboards as you drive into Tucson. You know, that you're definitely, I think, staking your claim for this market segment in this region.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that will be.
Yeah, we actually just, we have one going out of Tucson, two coming into Tucson. We also have one in Nogales now, and we also have some digital billboards in Nogales coming back to Tucson. So we're reaching everybody because so many people from Tucson go to Phoenix. So many people from Tucson go to Mexico. And then they come back. So that's where my advertising gets.
It is pretty amazing that people in the Maricopa area don't understand that. You know, they come down here and they talk about the drive and, well, I better make it a full day of it. You know, we'll go 2 hours up for an hour meeting and then 2 hours back.
Yep.
So there's no doubt folks who live in our region in Pima County, we're comfortable going places. And I think you guys are doing a good job of expanding that. I'm going to go to the break now because I think I'm going to ask you to stay around to the top of the hour because I definitely want to hit on not only the focus of the company here in Tucson, but the focus of your philanthropy and support for the community. That's the piece of getting engaged. So you've been listening to the voices of Chris and Corbin Edwards with Tucson Appliance Company, and we will be right back after the break on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Welcome back. This is The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Tune in every day at 7 o'clock in the morning to catch The Morning Voice. Five hosts, five different topics. It's always something to talk about. My guest today this 8 o'clock hour have been Chris and Corbin Edwards with Tucson Appliance. A lot of good conversation. Last time we crossed the political spectrum a little bit, talking about the impact of tariffs and the future impact potentially on your industry, you know, being the supplier of appliances to Tucson. But now I want to talk about a little bit what you, it's an organization, do to support the community. We already alluded at the very beginning, top of the hour, to the fact that you had purple hair for a long time, even after the heart ball was over. Your first attempt to get rid of it didn't quite get everything out. But Chris, you've been really prominent, and you've made sure that Tucson Appliance has been prominent in its support for different entities and organizations. I'd like you just to share with the listeners why you feel that's important.
All right. Well, you know what I'm going to do here? This is part of how I do Corbin. I'm going to let him answer that question.
Outstanding.
Sorry, what was the question again? sorry.
So the reality is, why is philanthropy so important to Tucson Appliances? And why do people like your father, you know, color his hair purple?
those are two different topics.
Okay.
No. But we try and do our philanthropic, I can't say that, but you know what I'm saying, part in our community to help out our community because it is part of us. We live here. We work with each other. We want to help each other out. It's kind of like you help me, I help you sort of situation, but we want to go out and help those that are in need in unfortunate circumstances because we are blessed to be in the appliance industry and we want to give back to them.
Can you rattle off a couple of the charities or churches that we donate to?
Oh God, there's a lot of churches, a lot of schools, Boys and Girls Club. You're putting me on the spot. I wish I had a list.
Darn straight, I am.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I feel this has turned into like a test.
I know, right? I'm being judged right now.
No, he's not being judged. I just wanted him to see what it is, and what it is we're blessed to be in the appliance industry. Nobody else in Tucson does that. Not Home Depot, not Lowe's, not Best Buy, not Christie's Appliance. We are in the community. We go to these charity events. And we show our face and we say hi to people and we say, hi, where can we help? And because we care about our community, we want to make sure our community thrives. And there are people out there that are not well off or as well off as us or some of our employees. And our employees enjoy doing things for the community also. They're engaged. When they deliver it, the people take pictures with them. Mm-hmm. They're happy. They give them hugs. They cry. That's just who we are.
And to that point, you guys, in my opinion, go above and beyond. You could always be a donor. You could always give, you know, $5,000, a $10,000 sponsorship. You can do all that, and it gets your name out there. But you do take it to the next step on some of these issues. You're involved, and this will be you and me now, the two older gray-haired gentlemen, I guess, in the room to talk with, you know, kind of lead the importance of this and then, you know, educate Corbin in this case. Mm-hmm. It's about getting engaged. If you want to make where you live a better place to live, you need to be involved. You need to get educated. You need to get engaged and you need to be heard.
Yeah. And I will tell you that, I mean, I'm involved in SALC, Southern Arizona Leadership Council.
Yes, you are.
Breakfast Club of Tucson that I missed today.
But thank you for that.
You know, a couple other different clubs and charities. And, you know, when they ask, it's hard for me to say no because it just makes my heart happy that I'm able to be here, be able to help. And I will tell you that after all these commercials, these radio spots, these billboards, these magazines, these newspapers, these interviews, word of mouth is our best advertising, 100%.
And there is a piece, obviously, from a business perspective, you gain from the exposure. But at the same time, every time you make a post, every time you're giving the fingers, and you're getting the picture and you've got everybody around you're doing it with those charities that you support. Mm-hmm. You talked about it, you're involved in the business community, you're involved in several, you're not idly just standing by and hoping that this community prospers. Because the fact of the matter is, yes, you're in appliance business. Everybody needs appliances. But if the community's prospering,
then we're prospering. Yep, mm-hmm. Exactly, 100%. And that's how we roll.
And too often, I think, in this region, we lose perspective of that. How do we address crime? How do we address poverty, jobs, and opportunities?
Yes.
So if local businesses grow, what are you going to have to do? Hire more people.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
And that's part of giving back. Giving back is not just doing the charitable thing to help those who are in need. But you guys have taken that to the level of through your engagement, everything else. I think there's a lot of support that you give to the region. And hopefully we'll all see make Tucson. And when I say Tucson, that means Tucson or Valley Morana, Sarita. It means Pima County. We don't tell people we live in Pima County, or rarely will you say somebody say, I live in Oro Valley. If you're on the other side of the country, you say Tucson. So that's part of your name and your mantra as well. Mm-hmm. So we've got about two more minutes.
All right, Corbin, why don't you talk about GTL and what you're doing over there?
Oh, okay. I am part of GTL, which stands for the Greater Tucson Leadership, a little organization that pulls in a bunch of people. And we have a full day meeting once a month, every month for a couple of months. And we have a bunch of speakers come by and we talk about a topic. It's a different topic every day. Last time was Border Day. We've had Environment Day, Education Day. it wasn't called medical day. It was like hospitality day or something. But it was great because we all get to go together. We get to do activities, kind of see what other people are going through and have us speakers talk about what they do in that department.
Well, Greater Tucson Leadership, the yes. organization, puts on a great program, and it sounds like you are going through that program right now.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a couple other programs that after you get through that one that I think we can go on to prepare you even more for the leadership your role you're going to take in the community. But GTL does a great job of exposing people to what's happening in Tucson and how things mm-hmm. get done.
And that's yep. one of his classes he's taken at Tucson Appliance.
There it is.
There you go.
You're outsourcing the classes. That's a smart move. Chris. So I want to thank both of you for one, supporting the show, and also for being with us today.
No, thank you.
Well, time flies when you're having fun, and we love talking about ourselves.
Absolutely. And this has been The Morning Voice. Ted Maxwell, stay with 1030 The Voice for Win Tucson.
Only at Ted Maxwell, where you are a priority.
There you go. Thanks, Chris.